I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to explore the legacy and impact of public broadcasting icon Fred Rogers. Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like, airs tonight on WFYI-TV at 8. My guests are Dr. Gary Edgerton, Director of Media and Entertainment at Butler University, Cameron Radford, Indianapolis Director of Community Outreach, and Amy Helton with Early Learning Indiana. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today on No Limits about the life, legacy, and impact of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, a PBS public broadcasting icon and an important figure in the lives of now, six or seven generations of American children. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Gary Edgerton. He is Director of Media and Entertainment at Butler University. Cameron Radford, Indianapolis Director of Community Outreach, and Amy Helton with Early Learning Indiana. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Certainly. To help set the stage for our conversation, we're going to listen to a clip. President and CEO of Fred Rogers Company, Paul Siefkin, couldn't join us for the show, but was able to make a few comments about the legacy of Mr. Rogers and the importance of his work as it relates to early education, community and neighborhood relations, and the power of programming.
Fred Rogers came at every episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood with his audience in mind. He had a background in child development, and he really paid great attention to the stories that he told to make sure that they were speaking to key elements of early childhood education. He spoke to matters of self-worth for young children, but also self-control. He also included themes about empathy and about community, all things that children are wondering about and just starting to learn about. He was pretty revolutionary in the way that he approached creating children's television. Children's entertainment in general was a little late to the game of thinking about what its audience needed and what its audience cared about. Fred took the audience very seriously and really crafted his messages so that children understood and also could relate to this person who seemed to get them. You know, you have children who are sort of going through this shift in their thinking so that they understand that there are other people around them, that they're not necessarily the center of the universe, and that they are part of a family, which is part of a neighborhood, which is part of community. And so he felt it was really important to incorporate the word neighborhood into the program. In every episode, he not only went and visited the neighborhood of make-believe, where children could kind of see the themes played out in the narrative story of the day, but he would also leave his house and go around his neighborhood and meet his neighbors to understand that there are people around us that contribute to our daily lives and that can help make things work.
That was the president and CEO of Fred Rogers Company, Paul Siefkin, talking about the impact and the intent of the late Mr. Rogers. We're talking about that life and impact today on No Limits. Again, if you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I actually can't think of a better way to illustrate the power of what Fred Rogers did than an offhand moment that occurred just before we went on the air. Amy Helton with Early Learning Indiana. Actually, it's a pity radio is not a visual medium here, but you brought a prop for this discussion. Could you talk about what it is?
I did. Not everybody brings a prop to a radio show.
No.
But I have a four-year-old daughter at home. Hi, Georgia. And she packed my bag for me to go to talk about Mr. Rogers today with something that was really important to her. She sent me with her Daniel Tiger.
Okay.
So not only did I grow up on Fred Rogers, but my kids are growing up with him as well.
And that is amazing at some level, because you think about it, he's been dead for 15 years now, and really hasn't done new shows for 17. The sort of lasting impact here is something remarkable. So I'll stay with you, Amy, but I want everyone's thoughts on why he exploded in the way he did, because not everyone gets that kind of impact. What thoughts they might have, Amy?
Well, Fred really understood the way kids experience the world. So often in programming for children, what we have is a long buildup of, oh no, here's the problem. And then there's one moment at the end when it's fixed and everything is better. That's not how kids learn. Kids need to see the solution over and over again. And that's what Fred did. He gave you the opportunity to see how to love and how to care and how to fix things when somebody makes a mistake. But he showed you the solution as the focus, not the problem. And that's what we need more of.
Cameron.
Well, for me growing up, there was really just no other show like Mr. Rogers. There was no show that approached, talking to children, but making sure it didn't feel like he was talking to us as children. It was like we were young people who were going to be the future leaders of tomorrow. But he was able to really make the connection as to why it was important to love your community, to be involved in your neighborhood, to learn these life lessons. And, that's something that really stuck with me over the years. And I think people of my generation who are, just old enough to have seen those new episodes of Mr. Rogers have really carried that a long way into adulthood. So, there is really only one Fred Rogers, and, we've had a lot of good entertainers who have been able to kind of step into that role, but no one's really, in my opinion, been able to really fully step into those large shoes that he left.
Gary.
Yeah, I would just echo what Amy and Cameron were saying in the sense that, he established such a connection with his audience that a lot of people who did children's programming, especially in that era, played characters. And I think what's significant is that Fred Rogers played Fred Rogers, and he was just himself. And, a lot of thought also went into his program as well, that he was very influenced by, a educational psychologist, Dr. Margaret McFarland. And, his show was very much devoted to preschool children. Mm-hmm. So we're talking children under 6 years old. But he addressed them as equals. He addressed them with compassion, with intelligence, and with empathy. And, his audiences definitely felt that. And I think not only the children, but also the parents that were watching along with that really respected and learned a lot from Mr. Rogers.
So, Gary, I'm going to stay with you and ask you to put your your scholar's hat on here and talk about, because in some ways the timing was right, too, for him to have the impact he was early on. People did not entirely sense the educational power that television could have, that broadcasting could have. We are of a reasonably similar vintage. I remember the kid shows I watched really did not focus much on uplifting my soul or training my mind. They were there basically just to divert me for a little while.
Sure. And also, too, I think when you're talking, you know, public broadcasting, we're doing the transition in the mid-1960s from NET to the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. But the children's programming has been around since the very beginning of the history of television. And you had good shows that I think, you know, today you would see educational value in Kukla, Fran and Ollie and Howdy Doody and especially Captain Kangaroo.
Yeah, I was a Captain Kangaroo kid.
Yeah, who eventually, you know, went to public television as well. But I first and foremost, because it was in a commercial venue, you know, there were lots of ancillary products that were involved with it, that it was an educational and entertainment, but also a venue to make profit. And one of the things that was unique about Fred Rogers, even, you know, when the show got into the 1980s and the 1990s, he refused to have, you know, any of the ancillary products, you know, associated the characters of his show sold like that because, you know, I think a lot of people know he was a Presbyterian minister and he took his ministry. What he asked it to be was to devote his life to children on television. And, you know, his elders within the church allowed him to do that, and he really devoted his entire life to this particular mission.
Amy, I'm going to throw this one to you. You know, at that point in the 60s, there were an awful lot of people awakening to the idea, okay, television actually could be an educational tool. It could be a way to spark young minds. Few of them, though, had the impact that Fred Rogers did. What separated him from the pack in terms of the educational components?
A lot of it was that Fred understood that there was much more to education than the academics. So although he did talk about concepts of preschool learning, colors, shapes, sizes, he really spent most of his time talking about those pro-social skills. And that's the space where kids are interested in learning. And that's the space where he could talk as a neighbor and tell you how to have success. I know even when I was a teacher and I was working in a preschool classroom, when the parents would come in and have a hard time with drop-off, Fred Rogers had an entire song that he wrote about grown-ups coming back. It's the everyday life moments that he captured and understood how to talk to children through the television about overcoming what they were afraid of or what was very real and intimidating in their lives.
When you talk about those pro-social skills, what are you talking about?
So those pro-social skills are the soft skills that we all need. How do we cooperate with one another? How do we handle a conflict? How do we deal with big feelings like jealousy, anger? Those are all real life situations, and they're complicated and hard for adults. Now, let's not forget about how much harder it is for kids. Mm-hmm. And Fred wasn't afraid to talk about those things and to talk about and acknowledge them as hard and then give strategies to overcome them, strategies that were achievable, something as simple as take a deep breath and count to four. But those simple measures are things that are doable for a child. When they hear Fred say it, it seems achievable.
How much of it also, and I want to pull Cameron in on this part as well, but I'd like to hear Amy's thoughts, was that there seemed to be a complete absence of judgment there, that he was judging anyone.
Yeah, I think one of the best places is when he talks about jealousy. He never talks about jealousy as something bad. He talks about jealousy as something that will happen. And when it does happen, let's talk about it and figure something out.
Cameron, your thoughts?
Yeah, so you look at the real time frame when Mr. Rogers first came on and was getting started, there was a lot of just social strife in the world.
68 was a tumultuous year.
Yeah, it very much was. So for him to have the vision to plant that seed in kids at an early age, talking about, you know, the soft skills that Amy was mentioning earlier, learning to deal with jealousy, learning to resolve your conflicts peacefully. that his, I think, carried a long way going from an era where just a few years before there was a lot of just discrimination and legal segregation in society, transitioning from that to kind of a more equal and just society, I think was a very important seed to plant in kids at that time and kind of keep it going into the future.
We are talking about the life and legacy of Mr. Rogers today on No Limits, in anticipation of the broadcast of Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like tonight on WFYI-TV at 8. My guests are Dr. Gary Edgerton, Director of Media and Entertainment at Butler, Cameron Radford, Indianapolis Director of Community Outreach, and Amy Hilton with Early Learning Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the life and legacy of Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, in anticipation of the broadcast tonight of Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like, which will be on WFYI-TV. It's a show in which host Michael Keaton celebrates Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, the pioneering children's series that premiered nationally 50 years ago. There is a huge list of A-list talents who are going to be part of this, including Whoopi Goldberg, John Lithgow, Yo-Yo Ma, Itzhak Perlman, Sarah Silverman, too many others for me to go through. We're talking more analytically about the impact of his show on broadcasting, on communities, and on now many generations of children. My guests are Dr. Gary Edgerton. He is Director of Media and Entertainment at Butler University. Cameron Radford, who is Indianapolis Director of Community Outreach, and Amy Hilton with Early Learning Indiana. So I want to start, Amy, with you on this and really take the point from the title of the show tonight, because it went beyond not only was there an absence of judgment here, it was actually affirmation. You're not a bad kid. It is you I like.
Yeah, absolutely. Even kind of picking up where Cameron left off before the break, thinking about the environment that Fred Rogers first came into, where there was not a lot of opportunities for kids to necessarily see something that looked like their life on TV. And when Fred would go around the neighborhood, Fred would go to houses that weren't beautiful, just the same way that he would go to a house that was big and bold and beautiful. And it made it accessible. Fred talked to people with all different ability levels, and Fred talked to people of every size, shape, and color. And it was available for everyone, right? Fred was your neighbor. He was your friend. And that was really who he was. Lauren Olson, one of our staff members at Early Learning Indiana, her father was actually a cameraman that worked with Fred Rogers.
Oh, wow.
And she shared the story about how her father had had a family illness. And when Fred found out, he stopped the shoot so that he could sit down and talk to her dad to make sure he was okay before they started filming. He truly was the man that he was on TV.
And that picks up on Gary's point that he really wasn't playing a character. It was Fred Rogers doing Fred Rogers. But in that climate, Cameron, I'm going to let you, I think we were rushing you a little bit as we were headed toward break.
No, we're good.
To finish your thought, because there is a quality, in some ways it was a time like today, 1968, where Americans were snarling at each other. There were protests in the street. There was a lot of anger floating across the land. Having this kind of gentle voice of reassurance was a nice counterpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. It went to show that it was okay for kids to associate with people who were different from them, who might have a different point of view. It just really, again, planted a seed that not everybody is going to be just like you growing up. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds who bring a lot of different elements to the community. So learning to get along with them, having those soft skills, goes a long way to benefit society as a whole.
How did he, Gary, how did he go about changing, though, our expectations of what children's programming should be?
Well, I think it was, he was part of a broader trend that was certainly happening in educational television and later public television, in the sense that, you know, to build off what Cameron was saying, that all that the neighbors who he interacted with were multicultural, and you know, a show that came afterwards, Sesame Street, you know, continued that whole thrust. The same thing with the electric company. You know, one thing in terms of talking about what you saw was who he was, that I had the opportunity to meet him twice. And the second time, especially, he came to the university that I was at, Old Dominion University in Virginia, and gave the commencement address. And I had an opportunity to spend some time with him. And one of the things that he shared at that time that actually, you know, in growing up, he was a lonely, shy, and chubby kid. And in fact, he was afflicted with asthma and he was homebound a lot. And, you know, he talked a good deal about the fact that he was bullied, that he was, you know, referred to as Fat Freddy in school. And, you know, those kinds of formative experiences, I think it gets to the depth and compassion of him, you know, as an individual and also as a performer, that what he did was he turned those difficult experiences of him as a child into, you know, something so loving and generous, which is what his show definitely was for over 30 years.
We are talking about the life, legacy, and impact of Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, in anticipation of the broadcast tonight on WFYA-TV at 8 of Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Jasmine has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jasmine writes, I have a question for your show. Growing up, I was Mr. Rogers' neighbor, his real next-door neighbor. Every summer, my family rented a house next to his crooked house in Nantucket. I know he lived there in his retirement and was a very private person. My family wanted to respect his space, and we only ever saw him walking his dog on the beach. What effect did his fame have on his personal life, and what other major accomplishments did he have during that time? That's really, since there's not a depth of, personal acquaintance here, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get a great answer for you, Jasmine, although it sounds like both Amy and Gary had at least some either indirect or direct acquaintance with him, and reported that he was a shy man, but very considerate of others.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is I don't think he was shy when he was an adult. That mm-hmm. I think it was something that he grew in. I think at least my impression was, and we also, you know, at the communication program I had there, brought in his producer, Hedda Sherapin at the time, who talked about the show and how it was designed and what they intended to do with all of it, that I think he was pretty much devoted to his work, you know, because it seemed to me that he had two great passions, that it was his work and his family. You know, he was married for over 40 years to his wife. He had two sons. But I think in all the other time that work was more than work for him, that again, it was his vocation. And he was a minister, and so I think he spent most of his time, you know, until he retired, spent most of his time devoted to his show. And there's no way you could do a show like this and do over 900 episodes if mm-hmm. you weren't totally committed to it.
Cameron and Amy, I mean, you are of the generation that actually watched Fred Rogers. My own children who are now older were Fred Rogers children too, although they were coming along right at the time that he was leaving the air with original shows. What was it about him that spoke to you so powerfully? Start with Cameron. Yeah. Amy just threw you under the bus, Cameron, to point it to you.
no worries. So for me, being a kid growing up, I had a lot of respect for my teachers in elementary school, but they were my teachers. They weren't on TV. They weren't quite as cool. Mr. Rogers was saying a lot of the same stuff they were saying, but Mr. Rogers was on TV, so I automatically just, you know, perked up and paid attention because it was really cool to see somebody on TV teaching these values, showing how important it is to be active in the community, to do good things, to treat other people well. And that is just something that I always really carried with me. And there were very few other shows at that point that were teaching that lesson, Sesame Street being one of them. But for me to see just this growing up on TV teaching these lessons, it went a long way because, you know, media has a large impact on children. It just does. And to be able to have that experience with Mr. Rogers growing up, I think it really did set a foundation for my life going forward.
Well, and I've got to say that may be the very first time in conversation that he's ever been referred to as cool. Cool, because in some ways, you want to say something?
Yeah.
I do want to get Amy's point too, but you go first.
Absolutely. Yeah. But part of it is I wanted to springboard off of what Cameron was saying, that he was strongly not cool. Mm-hmm. And I think that was part of his charm, because so many children's programs encourage kids to be cool. And what cool really means, I think, in that context is acting older than your age. Mm-hmm. And I think what he really encouraged, it's okay to be 3. It's okay to be 2. It's okay to be 4 years old. And to really, in the way that he projected being comfortable in his own skin, what he encouraged the neighbors who watched him, you know, at that young age, is also to be comfortable in the age that they are. And he, you know, what's interesting when you watch his show is how much silence was in it, where how frenetic most children's programming is, that he allowed space for everyone to breathe and just be themselves.
Amy.
Yeah, Gary's exactly right, and that it gave everyone the space to love themselves, because Fred told you that you were special and he loved you and he cared about you. And those lessons still resonate today when I watch it with my own children. And I think about, as a child, some of those small messages that he would give, like, will a haircut hurt? No, a haircut's not going to hurt. Let's talk about it. Let's walk all the way through it. That's real to kids. And that's mm-hmm. very scary. And he's taking the concepts that grown-ups sometimes forget. How tricky it is when you're little to navigate some of those pieces and work through it.
How much of it, I'll stay with you, Amy, on this too, also, is, you know, the way he started the show, where he comes in and he puts on the slippers and it's a way of saying, and, you know, and the cardigan that Cameron alone probably thought was cool, but seemed to, you know.
He was cool.
But writers, you know, writers ever since then, analysts of the program, you know, exhaust the thesaurus for coming up with ways to talk about how comforting a presence he was. You know, avuncular is, you know, the adjective that is most often, grandfatherly, fatherly. How much of that played into the part of the show of saying, okay, this is a space where you are welcome.
I think his actual presence, his pacing was a big piece of that. But there was, you described that him coming on and putting on those sweaters, and most of his sweaters, his own mother had knit for him. So it's that familiarity of, I'm here with you now. Mm-hmm. And creating a space where it's a space where we're all welcome. Mm-hmm. And he did that not only through some of those physical actions and the way that he spoke, but also because of who he had on the show. Mm-hmm. He intentionally went about having a variety of people on the show that made that possible. And I truly believe part of the reason Fred had such success with it was because it was real. Mm-hmm. It was truly who he was. He wasn't pretending. He really did feel like he was your neighbor.
We are talking about the life, legacy, and impact of Fred Rogers, the legendary Mr. Rogers. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what a listener named Tom has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tom, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Great.
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been a reporter in Springfield, Ohio, and a columnist for about 35 years. And in the 1980s, I drove over to Pittsburgh and interviewed Mr. Rogers. And often tell people that throughout my career, he was the most charismatic person that I'd ever interviewed. And I know that charismatic is not a word that's often associated with him, but he was was very much in the personal way that you all have been speaking about him. When you were talking to him in person, there was not another person alive in the world in his eyes. I remember being there and feeling that, and I also remember when I called to follow up on some questions, he wouldn't get to the business of answering questions first. He wanted to know what I was reading. He wanted to know how my children were. Because I'd, you know, shown pictures of them to him when I was there. And he was just, as everybody's been saying in the conversation, it's hard to, in my career as a reporter, I've concluded that there's nothing more powerful than a truly sincere person. And the depth of his sincerity and the presence of him as a person and his regard for you when you were speaking with him is, I think, I've never experienced that before and don't expect that I will again.
Well, thank you very much for calling and sharing that, Tom. Sounds like it was a marvelous experience and a great interview for you.
Oh, yeah. He was everything everybody was saying and more.
Well, thank you very much. Take care.
You're welcome. Thanks for having the show.
Sure thing. So, that kind of sincerity, I see Amy's nodding her head up and down, is difficult to fake.
It is. And he did it on the show, right? He would make space for kids on the show to answer and respond, and he was fine with the silence. And I think about the world that kids live in now and how many things compete for attention, compete for their grown-ups' attention. With Fred, he would wait. Even though it was through the screen, he did the best that he could through that medium.
How rare was that among broadcasters, Gary?
I think very rare. That one thing, you know, being a media historian and television historian, what I would recommend people to do is to go on YouTube and see that when he was inducted into the Television Hall of Fame in 1999. I caught it at the time almost by accident, was flipping the dial back at that time. And his comments were just so genuine. You know, most of those award shows are pretty self-congratulatory. And what he did is he had most of the audience in tears. He talked about fame being a four-letter word, and he was the real McCoy in terms of at least the times that I talked with him. He was much like the way he was on screen.
We are talking about the life and legacy of Fred Rogers today on No Limits. My guests are Gary Edgerton Cameron Radford and Amy Helton. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the life and legacy of Mr. Rogers today on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Gary Edgerton. He is director of media and entertainment at Butler University, Cameron Radford, Indianapolis director of community outreach, and Amy Helton with Early Learning Indiana. We're doing this in anticipation of the broadcast tonight of Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like, on WFYI-TV at 8 p.m. It's a star-studded show that's going to be hosted by Michael Keaton, and we'll look at the pioneering children's series. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook, as a listener named Stephanie has done, at No Limits WFYI. Stephanie writes, "I liked watching Mr. Rogers when I was little. In recent years, though, it has really hit me what he did and how kind he was. He showed that everyone was just as important as the next person. We all need to be more like Mr. Rogers." In some ways, Cameron, this speaks to your wheelhouse. I mean, one of the themes was the importance of community.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, there was no, there was nothing quite like Mr. Rogers before he came along, and he really did set a foundation for the future, not just for getting kids to love their community, but for also other media outlets, having other shows come along and kind of copy that format. Again, nobody's been quite the same because Mr. Rogers was just Mr. Rogers. He didn't need to dress up in any type of costume or be anything other than what he genuinely was. So that was pretty revolutionary, I think, at the time. And it has really transcended generations. You see, like we said earlier, Sesame Street, you had shows like Barney, even in the animated world, seeing a cartoon like Rugrats teaching those life lessons that kids could really take with them into adulthood. I think his, in a way, changed the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I, the other part of this is that in that landscape, you know, we had, one of the names we haven't mentioned yet was one that from my youth, Soupy Sales, who, of course, famously, you know, suggested to children that they go and find those, you know, rectangular green pieces of paper that can be found in parents' wallets and purses and send them to him. But there was never any attempt, and I think, Gary, you kind of touched on this, there was never any attempt on the part of Fred Rogers to manipulate children.
Absolutely. But I would say, again, from a TV history point of view, what to think about him is also Soupy Sales. You know, his show started out of Detroit, and it was a local show. And the same thing with Fred Rogers, that people were inventing what television was at that time, you know, just coming out and within the context of it being non-commercial, it was such a breath of fresh air and so much different than the other kinds of children's programming that existed at the time. He's influenced by them. You know, the puppets are Kukla, Fran, and Ollie in those. So he's very much a, you know, a television artist of his time. But that, along with the Children's Television Workshop and Sesame Street, really took children's programming to another level.
Amy.
And not only he was taking children's programming to another level, and it went so far beyond just not manipulating children. He created a space for acceptance for children. Even in his understanding, because he did have a child development background. So he understood the opportunity space he was working in, right? That we have kids at home that don't have access to some of the early childhood learning, that don't maybe have access even to peers to have that supported play. Mm-hmm. So he created the land of make-believe, where kids could learn how to play with others by pretending. That's actually an incredibly beneficial skill. And no manipulation required. You just open up the opportunity space for kids.
We are talking about Mr. Rogers, his life and legacy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Richard has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Richard, you're on the air.
I just wanted to make a comment. There was a very great film called Mr. Rogers and Me, presented by the Harlem Film Festival, about a neighbor of Mr. Rogers. That he talks about Mr. Rogers and how much of a great neighbor he was. I just thought I'd make that comment. It's called Mr. Rogers and Me. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. So the other part I think we've got to get to, though, is he went beyond being part of, you know, children's programming and became a huge part of the cultural landscape, too, to the point that he was actually the subject of parodies. Probably the most famous is Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live doing, you know, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. At what point do you think he crossed over and stopped being, you know, just a television presence and did become this real force for within the American culture, in some ways internationally?
Yeah, I think it was in the 1990s. I mean, what is interesting about him and is so consistent is he also visited Saturday Night Live and surprised Eddie Murphy, you know, on air when he was doing, you know, one of the times that he was doing that. That in a certain sense, we're sort of having a little bit of a renaissance of Fred Rogers, too, that what's in play, a new documentary just came out on Fred Rogers, and also there is a biopic that's being produced, and Tom Hanks has been cast to play Mr. Rogers.
Can anyone play Mr. Rogers, Amy?
No. I don't know if I was going to pick somebody. Tom Hanks is a pretty good second stringer. I think that renaissance that we're experiencing right now has so much to do with a cultural desire to re-experience that calm, cooperative, caring atmosphere that he generated.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Judy. And again, if you want to join the conversation via email, you can send your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Judy writes, "I am 42 years old and part of the Fred Rogers generation. I think one of Fred's gifts was his talent in music and his use of music to impart his message. I still remember the tunes and lyrics of his songs, It's You I Like, What Do You Do With the Mad That You Feel, and so forth, all these years later, since I watched as a preschooler. He also included opera singer Francois Clemens and made visits to Joe Negri's music shop on his show. Studies have shown that music has a way of staying with people in a way that other media cannot. And I think that was part of Fred's genius, highlighting the arts, but most importantly, using music to communicate the important things he wanted to say." Amy.
Yeah, so my husband is actually a classically trained musician. He plays with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. And that's what he always credits his love of music with, is that he learned how to sing with Fred.
Yes, Gary.
I think it was also a tool for him to connect with people. The two times I saw him, music was a big part of it. The first time I drove up to Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club, because he was doing a presentation on children's television, and you had all these hard-bitten journalists there, you know, asking questions. And one of the first things he did is he got them all to join in on It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And once he did that, the tone was a different tone altogether in terms of, and it was really a good talk. At Old Dominion, when he came and did the commencement, there was a small segment of students who actually protested. You know, part of it, you know, being early 20s, was being embarrassed at the fact of, you know, someone who was so important to them when they were younger, and they wanted someone who was cooler. And the same thing happened there. He got up at the podium, gave a great talk. They gave him a standing ovation afterwards. But what he did at the very beginning was he said, okay, everyone join me with It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And once he did that, he had the audience in the palm of his hands.
Was it also a way, Amy, I'm going to throw it back, and I want Cameron's thoughts on this as well. Often we hear things, and I think this was Judy's point, differently when the message is delivered to us in song rather than delivered even in the most conversational terms.
Well, from the perspective of child development, it actually triggers more sections of the brain when we're tying those words to music. You see more neurons fire. And if you're thinking about how to get a message across and have it be memorable, that's one of the best ways. If it didn't work, we wouldn't have jingles and things like that stuck in our head all the time. But from the perspective of helping a child learn a strategy, so the take a deep breath and count to four is part of that What Do You Do With the Mad That You Feel song. And it works because we can remember it in that moment when everything is just too much. Your brain can pull that song out and you can figure out what to do. It works for adults as well. Our brains work better when we tie things to music.
Cameron.
Yeah, and I'll just hop on both of their comments. I grew up in the church. We were in church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. Thinking about back to when I was a kid, I can't remember a lot of the sermons that the minister preached, but I sure do remember a lot of those gospel songs that the choir would sing and the messages that they have. And I think Mr. Rogers, thinking about his show growing up, while I remember a lot of the general messages that he would talk about, I can't remember a ton of just specific shows where he said a certain thing, but I sure do remember a lot of those songs and the messages that they had. So again, music is something that you go to any culture anywhere in the world and you can really tell a lot about that culture, about the music that they have, the lyrics in those songs. And I believe that Mr. Rogers made that connection, and with a lot of the music that you would see in his shows, they reinforced those positive messages that he would talk about every show.
I'm going to stay with you on this, Cameron, but I want everyone's thoughts. What do you think, the most profound impact that Fred Rogers had was? I know it's a big question, so...
That is a big question. I think it comes down to one word at the end of the day, and that's love. Just have love for your community, have love for yourself, and that there is no force in the universe more powerful than simple love.
Amy, then I'll come to you, Gary, I promise.
I'm going to stay right there where Cameron is. So Mr. Rogers had a song that was, "There are many ways to say I love you. There are many ways to say I care about you." And then he goes through and lists all the ways that people say they love you. And if there was any message he wanted out there, it was for people to share their loving messages.
Okay. I mean, sort of building off of that, I think what he did was he met the audience where they were at, that, I liked a show like Howdy Doody, but for example, they had the peanut gallery where all the kids were there, and what they really did was encourage the kids to act out and to be as gregarious and over the top as possible. And what he did was he clearly, again, being relaxed and low key, is he allowed 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. I remember my own kids, saying to me, we'd go out and they go, "Hey, Dad, 1-3-4 or 1-4-3," and I said, "Well, what's 1-4-3?" And they got it from Mr. Rogers, and sort of consistent with what Cameron and Amy, want, just a number of letters, "I love you," and what he did was he broke it down for preschoolers to make sense of these kinds of things and really met them, which is the key to what communication is all about, met them where they are.
So I'll ask this, and again, I want everybody's thoughts. Will we see anyone like Fred Rogers again? Shaking your head doesn't work on radio. Yeah,
right. Well, I didn't want to.
That's okay. I'm going to start with you and go back around.
I had just talked, so I was.
Yeah, no.
I would say no. That I think he's a you know, one of the beauties of media is he's going to be around forever in the sense that people are going to do it. But you know, as culture changes, you know, the kinds of styles that we have, that I think he was unique. His show was host driven. And you take out that host, and all of a sudden it's a different kind of show.
Cameron.
It's very difficult to imagine, especially given this day and age where you have so many distractions in media, your phones, your tablets, you still have television and radio. It's just a different era. It's nothing's impossible, but I just cannot see someone stepping into that role and being able to have the impact for so many people that Fred Rogers had. I knew to tune in every day to watch Mr. Rogers. It was just a part of my routine. And it's just very difficult to imagine anybody this day and age being able to do that and have the just huge impact that he had during his time.
Amy.
So while I don't think that we'll ever get another Fred Rogers, the beauty of the way that the media can work is that we don't need to, because we don't have to lose him. His songs, his stories, his legacy can live on. Even in the new show that's inspired by the work of Fred Rogers, Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, you can have a new way for kids to experience those same messages. So even though I don't think we'll ever get another Fred Rogers, that doesn't mean that his message, his love, and all of his work has to go away.
So I think it's appropriate, given what we have been talking about here, that we close this with a children's voice of a child's voice of some kind. And again, I'm going to lean on you, Amy. If miraculously we were able to produce Fred Rogers in front of your 4-year-old daughter, what do you think she'd want to say to him or ask him?
Oh, she wouldn't want to say anything. The first thing she'd want would be a hug. She calls him Daniel Tiger's papa, because that's what's really important to her. And her message that she would want is to have that hug and hear from him how special she is.
I can't think of a better way to end this show than that. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Gary Edgerton, Director of Media and Entertainment at Butler, Cameron Radford, Indianapolis Director of Community Outreach, and Amy Hilton with Early Learning Indiana. Also, please thank your daughter for us as well.
I will.
I've enjoyed talking with all of you. I'd like to remind our listeners that tonight at 8 on WFYI-TV, they can watch Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like. It's a star-studded celebration of Mr. Rogers' life and legacy, and it is hosted by Michael Keaton. Thank you for being with us here. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.